Addiction isn't a character flaw. It's a brain pattern that we can understand and treat. Today, Dr. Fred Schiffer explains a dual brain approach to craving and recovery, and you're going to leave with five actions you can take this week. Welcome to The Advisor with Stacey Chalemi, where insight becomes action. You'll learn a simple brain-based model of addiction, practical tools for cravings, and unclear treatment paths that can actually help you. Now, Dr. Schiffer, welcome and say hello to everybody and tell
Hi.
everybody a little about yourself and why addiction, is one of the things that you have an interest in and why it's so important to you.
Okay, well, first, I'm a psychiatrist. I'm on the faculty at Harvard, and I have a startup company we have a study going on using near-infrared light. It's a medical device to treat addiction. And we're treating fentanyl addiction with it. And we're going to have our results in a few weeks. And it's been a 3-year study. And it was financed by the National Institute for Drug Abuse. And we have an FDA breakthrough designation. And what we're seeing is I'm blind right now to who's getting sham treatment, who's getting the active treatment, but we see that all of the people who are enrolled are actively heavily addicted to fentanyl, and all have had multiple overdoses, near life-threatening overdoses, we're seeing that. That a high percentage of the enrollees are doing well and coming way down on their fentanyl use or coming off it, and we're hoping that it's not the sham treatment that's benefiting them. That would be amazing if it is. We'll have to package the sham treatment, but we're hoping that it's our active treatment where we're trying to stimulate one brain hemisphere, and as I talk, I'll explain why we're doing that. So I have an interest in addiction because it just fits into my general psychiatric interests. And I see a lot of addicts in my practice, and in fact, I don't call them addicts, and I like to say that I don't have any addicts in my practice. What I have are trauma victims, and I'll explain that. And I think that when someone is called an addict, it is demeaning and traumatizing. So you're adding one trauma onto other traumas, and it complicates it. And the addictions span from opioid addiction or fentanyl addiction to pornography addiction to food addiction, and they have very great things in common. And so I think maybe I'll begin by explaining what I think an addiction is.
Yes.
So there is such a thing as an addiction, but I don't think that there are addicts. In other words, that it's sort of like there are negative behaviors. So if I'm getting angry all the time, that's a behavior that I need to understand and look at and try and correct. Excuse me. My throat gets foggy. Sorry. So I need to understand why I'm getting angry and address it. But to call me the angry man or having an angry man syndrome, is just going to make me more angry and more insecure, and so while it's not that I don't think that people get involved with drug abuse or food abuse or or sexual abuse, or so all of these things exist. And I define an addiction as a compulsion, an irresistible compulsion to do something that you realize is destructive. And so if I have to go to the racetrack, and I know every time I go there, I lose $1,000, maybe my friends are ask me not to go, and I have a sense that it really isn't sensible, but I can't help it. I'm just I have an obsession, and I want to win the race, and I can't control it. And so I would say an addiction is an obsession that you can't control, that you do something that's harmful, that's destructive to you, and usually it's to you and members of your family or friends, and addictions don't have any good benefit. And so then we come to an interesting question. So if it doesn't have any benefit, why is it so common? And there may be more addicted people than not addicted people, and it's a very common phenomena. How can we understand this compulsion, whether it's to eat or to take fentanyl? And when you take fentanyl, usually it's injected, or sometimes it's sniffed through the nose, but it's often mixed with a horse tranquilizer, which causes terrible infections in the arm, and people who are using fentanyl know that they're at risk, but they can't stop themselves. So even with something that's obviously life-threatening, and the people that we enrolled 130 people in the study, and I would say that at least 90% had at least three near life-ending overdoses. So they may have been over the years, but we would ask that as a question. So this is a very serious addiction, and so the question is, why would somebody do that? And also with food addiction, that somebody wants to lose weight and be more attractive, and help them socially, that there's a lot of stigma about being overweight, and you get treated negatively and rejected, so it's a very painful condition. And so why would someone do that? And the answer is, in my opinion, that there's a hidden trauma, and that all of the things that people get addicted to are pleasurable initially. That we're looking for relief from pain. And food is a drug, in a sense. It feels good, that we'll go into a restaurant and spend a lot of money for a delicious meal, and then we come out and we regret, oh my God, I ate the whole thing, but if you have an addiction to food, it's irresistible, and you can't stay away from the refrigerator. You can put a lock on the refrigerator, and you'll break the lock. It's just a It's not something that a human being can control unless they do some deep work. And one of the basic premises that I have that I talk about in my book, if I have a copy of it here, yeah, here, okay. Does that have a copy? This is Goodbye, Depression, Anxiety, Depression, and PTSD, Life-Changing Science of Dual Brain Psychology. And what dual brain psychology posits is that each brain hemisphere, we all know that we have a left brain and a right brain. And
Yes.
at Harvard, what I discovered was that each brain, the left brain and the right brain, can each independently have a mind. And there are some really interesting studies that really show this, that you can actually put half the brain to sleep with an anesthetic through the carotid artery. And so you're then talking with one hemisphere.
Wow.
And you can, a lot of times the person will start to cry or laugh. They have an affective change when you do that, and that the different hemispheres have different personalities. And what I've shown in earlier podcasts with you and with Lisa is that looking out one half of one eye. So if I take like an envelope, I like to use junk mail, and if you cover one eye and half the other eye, I'm looking out what's called the lateral, my right lateral visual field. And
Yes.
it turns out, and this is just a lot of research that I've done, that it actually stimulates the opposite brain. So if I go like this, I can stimulate my left brain, and if I just go on the opposite side, I can actually stimulate my right brain. And we have published an fMRI study showing that you can get pretty dramatic changes in blood flow, which is a measure of brain activity. So you really are stimulating the opposite hemisphere with just a simple technique. And the reason for it is the back of the eye has the retina, and the retina is what receives the light, and it happens to be divided vertically. It's just the nature of
Yeah.
the way we're made, but it's true in everybody, the medial portion of the retina, which is what if I go like this, I don't want to get lost in this, but it stimulates a part of the medial part of the retina, and that crosses over to if I'm looking at the right side, to my left brain, and
Right.
actually stimulates it profoundly. And we tried this earlier in an earlier podcast with you, and you felt a significant difference. And most people do. And it's kind of amazing. It's surprising. And if I told somebody, you take some junk mail and I'm going to have you feel very differently, it wouldn't be believable. But if you actually try it, you'll see that you can feel differently. Now, what dual brain psychology further emphasizes is that the minds of the left brain and the right brain are such that one of them, and it can be either the left brain or the right brain or an individual,
Yeah.
is more troubled, is seeing the world through old traumas. And so that Within myself, I have my trauma is located more in my right brain, and so if I go like this, I get upset in the middle of the night and I come down, I can go like this and I can talk with Freddie, and see what he's upset about, and I know him pretty well, so I know what would get him upset, and I've had traumas from my childhood, and they persist. Now they don't destroy my life, or I'm not acting in ways that I wish I weren't. But he does wake me up not infrequently at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I have to go down and talk to him. And if I look out the other side, I get a sense of, now I can handle this, and with patients I do it all the time. I'll have a therapy session with a patient where we use either an envelope, or we have special sunglasses that we're trying to make in China, and we're having some difficulties because of the tariffs and stuff. But eventually we're going to bring them to market, and they stimulate one brain or the other, and the idea is that if you look out your troubled side, you're going to have cravings, and you're not going to like yourself, and you'll look at me and you'll feel that I don't like you, or that I'm angry or something, and which I'm not, and then you look out the other side. And I'll look like an empathic therapist, and it just takes a second. It's like it goes from one side to the other. You're looking for different actions for people with eating addictions or compulsions to eat. That first you have to understand what your trauma is, and the trauma is often hidden. In other words, it's not. It can be, a major trauma. It can be that you were living in Gaza, or you were an Israeli hostage. Most of the traumas, or all the traumas that I see in my practice, are from childhood, and they're not apparent, and so one of the things I would suggest is, if I want to talk to Freddie, I look out my left lateral visual field, and I can feel his anxiety, and then I can explore it. I can say, "What are you feeling anxious about? What's the danger?" And if I work at that, I can often get a reading that has to do with the trauma that I had, some bullying when I was a child, and all these years later, I can still feel that when that's something, and so one is, if you can identify the hidden traumas that you're not noticing, that you've forgotten about, and what happens is that the trauma snowballs. So if I were bullied, then it took my attention away from school, and then led to later anxiety, and depression, so I had to. Had a lot of therapy and worked it out, went to a good college, and good medical school, and then I'm teaching at Harvard, and I've been there for 50 years, and so I've been doing well, I've learned how to activate my more mature side, my healthier side. If someone is feeling a compulsion to eat, so I think the first thing to do is to talk with your troubled side and try and understand it and explain to it that it's not your fault, that it's the trauma, and try and negotiate with it and treat it with respect and understanding. And then also you can look at the other side and have a very different experience. And feel well. It should decrease the craving for food. So what I'm saying sounds ridiculous. Get a piece of junk mail and treat your food cravings. But that's what I'm saying. And later, when we have our sunglasses, you can wear those and they'll work. And then you can wear them for long periods of time. All of my patients use them. I'd also recommend getting my book. It gives much more detail about how to do this and has narrative fictional depictions of therapy sessions that are accurate but don't have any private information in them. And it talks about the science. There's a great deal of science that goes into this. And I have about 30 publications and two books on
It almost seems like you're when you cover one side of your eye versus the other side, because you both sides have different minds. It's like one side wants to pull you in one direction, and the other side's trying to pull you in the other.
Exactly. Now, I want to correct one thing. That if you go like this, it won't do anything because each eye is connected to both brains. And so the reason that I want you to look out half of the eye is to steer the light and the stimulation to the opposite brain. And the reason for doing it to the opposite brain is that the retina is divided 60-40. So you get a bigger kick if you look out the lateral half than the medial half. But sometimes a patient will come in and they'll say, I can't see out of one eye. So I say, okay, so let's do this. So you look out this side and then close the troubled eye and look out the middle, and they get a difference. It's similar. So do you want to try it? And we'll see if we can demonstrate that. And you may not have a response and will look silly, but if but whatever you feel, just share with the audience.
So if this was so with an addictional behavior, so would I would focus on any type of addiction that I might have, or is this for
Yeah,
anything?
I think that maybe if you can think of
Nice, I
are
crave
there
it.
some foods that you get cravings for? Okay, so can you imagine what food would that be? You mind sharing that?
So I like my dark chocolate. I like salty foods. Like salty foods, sometimes I get into a kick about, I'd rather have something salty than something sweet. And then, even sometimes when I'm not even hungry, those cravings, it's just I just want it,
Okay,
even though I
so
know I
let's
don't.
imagine, let's do sort of a mind experiment. Let's imagine that there's a delicious plate of salty chocolate. It's sitting right there and it's yours. And so I want you to look out one side or the other. You can pick which
Oh, you can
side
pick any
and
one. It doesn't matter.
doesn't matter. Okay. And I want you to concentrate on the dish in front of you, and this works very quickly. It's amazing. So from 0 to 10, how much do you want that chocolate?
Very, very
Zero would
little,
be
nothing
nine,
really.
ten would be extreme.
Barely a one.
Just a one. Okay. Are you right now, do you feel a compulsion to eat it?
Not at all.
Okay. Let's try the other side. And again, I wanted for the audience that you're looking out half of one eye, not the whole eye. And then a lot
Right.
of people don't understand that. And so for this to work, you have to look out half of one eye. So I want you to concentrate on that plate that's before you with the salty chocolate. What would you do you have a, how would you rate your desire for it from 0 to 10?
I think like a three.
Okay. So you think is it clear or not, or
The actual craving is clear, or that's
yeah,
the
is
way.
it, yeah, I mean, when you say three, you said you think it's three.
I think I have maybe a slight more craving, but nothing major, but just like a very slight craving for it, but to a point where I don't have the compulsion that I have to reach out and get it. I feel more controlled.
Okay. And so what number would you give it from 0 to 10?
I think like a two to three, like a two. Let's say a two.
Okay. So from 1 to 2. So it's not a big difference. Is there
No.
any food that you think you might crave?
Black chocolate.
Okay, well, let's try that. Okay.
Okay.
And is that any different or the same?
One.
Okay. And try the other side.
I feel less in this eye than I feel slightly more in that eye, but it very low.
Okay. So it's a I think it's a positive response, but not a dramatic response. And but I think that if we had someone who had an actual food craving,
Yeah.
they would feel a difference. Now, if you think of something upsetting, why don't you try that? See if you feel any
Okay.
more anxiety, feeling thinking of something upsetting.
Guess like a four.
Okay, and try the other side.
It feels a little bit more intense.
About how much?
Maybe about a six
Okay. Now,
or a seven.
oh, I'm sorry.
A six or a seven.
Okay. But it's clearly more. And so what I'm saying is that upset, if you had a craving, it would enhance the craving. So that's the main thing I'm saying,
Okay.
that there's a trauma that causes an upset that needs relief. Now,
Right.
if your trauma was 7 on one side, then it reaches an area where you need relief. If it's 8, you definitely need relief. If it's 10,
Yeah.
you'll break the lock on the refrigerator, or you'll make a phone call to your dealer, and so but the addiction is related to the trauma. It's related to the pain.
Yeah.
And if you can eat the candy bar, that'll help.
Well, I went through therapy to learn how to deal with these things. So that's probably why I'm better at coping with these issues. But I definitely do think that there was somewhat of a more once that, when I took the paper off both eyes and then I was looking with both eyes, the intent when I thought that those two thoughts, it was much higher that the feelings I had for either the craving or for the thought that I put in my head of something that bothered me.
I'm not sure what that means,
I'm not sure
in terms of
either.
my theory, but it may be that the troubled side was kind of not wanting to really come out and help us demonstrate this, and but then she came, sort of came out when she wasn't on camera, No, the thing is that there are, it's a whole brain, a hemisphere. It's got all the parts of the brain. In other words,
Yeah.
we talk about the amygdala and the hippocampus. Well, there are two hippocampi. There's one on the left side and one on the right side. There are two
Yeah.
amygdala, one on the left side, one on the right side. All the components of the brain are in each hemisphere. So each hemisphere is a whole brain. And
Okay.
you can actually cut the connection. So the brain is sort of like a walnut. It's wrinkly, and has a stem in the center. And in the 1960s, there were famous studies called the split brain studies. And these were the patients had intractable epilepsy that prevented them from having normal lives. They were having seizures every day. And so they decided to do this radical surgery. And it did help the seizures, but
Right.
they went on to study them, and they had two different minds. And I went out and did a study with they're in California, it's Caltech, and UCLA, and I did the first interview of two split brain patients. And I put a different word on each side of a screen so that because of the eye connections, they can only hear
Yeah.
the word. And I said, "How much do you feel?" One side might say depressed, and the other side might say happy. And we were able to do an interview, that in one individual, his right brain was happier, and his left brain was more depressed, and in the
Wow.
other individual, his trauma was more in his right brain, and he had been bullied as a child, and he told me it didn't bother him, happened so long ago. But that
Wow.
was his left brain that was speaking. His right brain doesn't have speech, and but
Right.
he could point to a peg from none to extreme. And so with the split brain patients, they clearly have two different minds. And
Yeah.
so each hemisphere can support a whole mind. And
Right.
what I've found is that one of these minds is more troubled by the trauma. And if it's more troubled, it's going to seek something for relief. It's
Yeah.
hard to bear the pain of trauma.
Yes, it is. I have epilepsy, actually. I know lots of people that went for the surgery, and it was pretty remarkable because their other side of the brain took over for the side that had the scar tissue damage, and they removed that scar tissue damage from the
Sure.
brain. The other side of the brain and the other parts of the brain automatically took over for that part.
And did they have a personality change?
I think so. I think one seemed a little bit more emotional and one seemed calmer.
We did two studies of what's called transcranial magnetic stimulation. It's a treatment for depression. It's very popular today. And what it is You go to the office for about 3 weeks, to the doctor's office every day, and you sit in the chair for 45 minutes, and they put a magnet over your forehead, and the magnet makes this banging noise. And so you listen for 45 minutes to this bang, 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 and it's causing some current in the brain from the magnet, and for some reason, the academy, everybody in their professorships, thinks that the left brain is good and the right brain is it holds all the bad stuff, and so they only put the magnet over the left side at a stimulatory basis. And so I was seeing that in a lot of people, when they looked to the left, stimulating their right brain, they were upset and they were more symptomatic. So we did two studies where we put goggles on where you could look out one side or the other, and ask them how depressed they felt. And they all felt, actually, there were 37 subjects in this first study, and 35 of them had a measurable difference in how depressed they were, and on one side versus the other. And it turns out that if you had a negative left hemisphere, you didn't do well with TMS. So they're stimulating a negative hemisphere, and they didn't do well. When they stimulated when they simulated a healthy left hemisphere, they did well. And we published that, and we replicated it and got identical data in a TMS clinic in Canada. And so we published two studies on that, and I wasn't able to get anyone to stimulate the right side in appropriate people, which would have doubled their efficacy. And so that's how I got interested in this light treatment. I was looking for some other way to stimulate the hemisphere, and this works really well, the light treatment. And if we get FDA approval, we'll bring it to market.
I've seen a lot of research, a lot of write-ups on it by doctors and scientists about light therapy and all different types of experiments they're doing with people. And there's a lot of positive outcome they see with the usage of light therapy. And that, they've used light therapy, different types of light therapy for different parts of the body, and they've seen the body heal itself, and with different types of light therapy, and it's remarkable. The body just and the speed also that I was reading, it also heals at a faster rate, with some of the devices they were using, and they saw a positive outcome that they normally wouldn't see without these light devices. And the healing process, which was much faster than the normal body is normally used to producing. So it was very interesting.
Right. And it's called photobiomodulation, and it used to be called low level laser, and we in 2009 we did the first study using it's a near infrared light. It's the kind of light that you turn your TV on with, and it goes through the skull into the brain. And so we did the first study using it for psychiatric disorders, and we got great results, and I have clinical trials. So a lot of the stuff that you'll read aren't formal trials. In other words, we use shams, and they're blind studies, and in our we did a phase one study that's published, where after twice a week treatments for 4 weeks, and the treatments are 4 minutes, and they're actually pleasurable. People feel good during this. It's not like hammer banging, and there's no pain involved. It's quite comfortable, and people generally feel good right after the treatment.
Wow.
So in that first study, there was a 10-point craving scale, and the people who got the active treatment had a 5.5-point drop
Wow.
in their cravings. The sham group had a 1.5 drop. So it was like five times or four something, times the
Yeah.
benefit. And you measure different treatments with something called the effect size. If you get Prozac, it has a very small effect. And so that would be about 0.3. If you have something that is very effective, it's 0.8 is considered high. Our effect size was 1.5, which is two times high. It's really very high. So we're hoping to get results like that with our fentanyl study, which is a continuation of this grant. Although the first group were involved with the heroin, and we weren't expecting fentanyl. We found that that's all that's out there.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. Now, when it comes to addiction, what would be we promised the listeners that we would give them five concrete actions. What are your five concrete actions that you could give people who are suffering from addiction and want to get on the right track? And what are some of the few things that they can do to begin on their journey to overcoming any type of addiction? So if they're suffering from alcohol addiction, if they're suffering from food craving addictions, if they're suffering from porn addiction and they want to stop these addictive behaviors or gambling, that another an addiction,
Right.
how, what are some suggestions that you have to start them, on this
Well,
journey?
let me tell you one story about gambling.
Yeah.
I don't answer your questions. I had a
Okay.
patient come in. He was there for a opioid addiction, which he did well with. And all of my patients have done well. And usually I use Suboxone. And he came in and told me that he wanted to gamble and had this strong urge to gamble. And I
Right.
said to him, "You're lucky you came to the right place. I have got a casino in the back." I said, "But there's a problem. There's a cover charge." And we had an auction, and he was willing to give me $2,000 to go. And it was through, I restarted at 200 and kept going up. And he said if he were losing, he'd go more, and so then I had him look out the other side. So this was what he was doing when looking out his negative side. He looked out the other side, and he wouldn't pay me anything. I said, "How am I going to support myself?" That's a real example, and I've published that. So these are actually powerful interventions. So the
Yeah.
first intervention, I would say, is again, I know it sounds self-serving, but buy the book. The book is really good. It's a fun read. It's written for lay people, but it really will tell you how to do this.
Yes.
Secondly, use your envelope, use your junk mail, and talk to your troubled part. That's number two. And try and discover what your trauma is. There are traumas there. And it may be that your father was famous and you felt you could never live up to that. And that's a trauma. Whatever hurts us is a trauma. I define trauma very broadly. It doesn't have to be blood and guts. It can be. I have patients whose fathers were violent and drunk and had typical kinds of traumas. But I also have a lot of people who have these covert traumas where their parents were absent or neglectful, and those things cascade into major traumas that then later in life you don't know where it came from, so you blame yourself and oh, I'm an alcoholic and I'm this and that, and that's supposed to feel good, but it doesn't. So number two is get to know your troubled side. Number three is get to know your healthy side. And if you're feeling upset, you can, in a few seconds, bring yourself to a position where you feel well and you have a sense, oh, I can handle this. And I don't need the candy bar. And I don't need to go in the back room and gamble. And it's a whole different outlook. And then number four would be to talk to from the two sides, from the healthy side to the troubled side, and help the troubled side. You become a therapist, a co-therapist, and teach it that it really isn't its fault, and teach it that it's that they're not an alcoholic, they're a trauma victim. And they have to understand that, and you have to be patient. It's a hard thing to unlearn. As I say, every 3 o'clock in the morning, if Freddie can wake me up, and so he's still there, but he doesn't bother me. He's my friend, and we get along well, and he helps me, and helps me understand my patients, and so it works out well, and. As a fifth thing, I think to notice that it's nicer when you feel well, and try to move into health. And it's hard to move into health. It's like another country where you don't speak the language and you're not used to it, and so you're going to find that the little person inside wants to keep controlling. They've been in control for years, and so it's not like one, two, three. I'm showing you that this is, it's not good to eat candy bars, and then it's all finished. That side believes that it has the answer. That it's a little child, and it thinks that the solutions that it comes up with are great solutions, and that the healthy side is, just doesn't get it, and this, but the truth is that the healthy side leads to healthy solutions that will work, and so you need to understand that the troubled side is going to try and pull you back in, and so you got to work with it, and again, that's what the book is about. So I think these are five steps.
That's wonderful.
But they
And
really work.
no, I believe it. But even when I did the envelope, I had more of an urge or more feeling on one side than I did the other side, even though the numbers weren't that high, for the things that I had envisioned in my head. One side was always less of that feeling, whether it be chocolate urge or whether it be the thought that I put in my head that was something that bothered me. It was always one side was a little bit more higher. But like I said, I've learned to deal with these type of things, so I relaxed a little bit better, but there was always one side that kind of had that little bit like more of a negative impact than the other side was a little bit more relaxed and more positive about the
Right.
situation.
I'm more mature, more adult.
How can someone actually, before we go, how can someone actually try to figure out what specific traumas are instigating some of these behaviors that they have? So you were talking about figuring out the traumas, that are instigated. For people who may not know how to actually, because a lot of stuff is stored in our subconscious, we may not even think of it, but those traumas are there, and certain things trigger it, which is the negative behaviors that we sometimes exemplify. But how can we go about like maybe a simple exercise or two that we could actually take some time to try to figure out what actual traumas are instigating our addictive behaviors?
First of all, the envelope is critical. Okay, it really accentuates this. But essentially, you have to do what Freud told us to do, where he had to just lie on the couch and free associate. And he was doing was he was trying to get us in touch with our subtle feelings. Okay, that's what you have to follow. So if you try and think it through, you're missing the boat.
Yeah,
So
that's true.
where if you want to understand yourself inside, you've got to follow your feelings, trust your feelings, and explore them, and understand that if you're feeling some anxiety, that some part of you believes that there's a danger. You're not going to feel anxiety unless there's a perceived danger, and a patient that I like to talk about was a Vietnam veteran, and he was doing well. He was treated for PTSD, but I had just discovered this hand thing, and I didn't respond to it at the time. I do now, and I asked him to do it, and he got very upset, and he said, "That plant behind you looks like the jungle." So I knew what I had. I said, so quickly, I said, "Well, look out the other side." And he said, "Oh, that's a nice looking plant." And it was apparent to me that he was feeling anxiety, and that it had to do with his combat experiences. He had a Purple Heart and reenlisted four times in Vietnam, and the way to get to it is to notice your anxiety and be curious about, well, what would that be about? What might be producing the anxiety? That there's always a reason for our feelings. And our job is to understand them. And I would follow Freud, and by free associating, it means getting in touch with your feelings and not your intellect.
I like that. That's very good advice. Because a lot of people, they don't want to go for help, but yet they want to figure out things. And I always suggest you really should go with someone who has experience that can guide you along. It's very important to have support groups. It's very important to be able to talk to someone you trust and you could relate to. But for some people who, want to maybe dab into it, and see if this is really a true thing or is it woo-woo and try it themselves first and then they grow trust for it and then they take the next step. I think that's an excellent, feedback that you just gave us, to help someone, take the first step. Because once someone understands that this is real, this actually, can trigger certain things and maybe help them get to some realizations, then they could take the next step and go to someone like you, read your book, and then do the therapy also when the glasses come out and people could actually, really explore it and really get some significant outcomes over it. So this is phenomenal. So, but before we go, tell everybody about your book once again, where we can find it and your website.
It's the best place to find it is on Amazon. It's on other online retailers, I think the just remember that it's the beginning of it is Goodbye Anxiety, and then you don't have to remember the whole title, and if you look up my name on Amazon, it'll come up.
I love it. Now, is there other services that you provide, that you offer to the public?
Not really. I write a lot about what consciousness is, and what life is, and how it relates to quantum physics and stuff. But this is a technical area, but it's another aspect of my publications. And we have a product in process that I can't talk about yet till we get the patent. But we're working on different products, but they're all based on the theory that's presented in the book, that about the
Wonderful.
brain hemispheres.
Well, I'm excited. I'm really excited. I had ordered your book, so I'm getting ready. I want to read it. And I also am very excited when, when everything passes through and they get the patents approved. I definitely would love to, be the guinea goat and try some of these products. Yeah, it's for sure, for sure. Well,
Yeah,
thank
and
you.
you can go to my website and follow that. It's called dualbrainpsychology.com.
Oh, excellent.
One
Excellent. And
word, yeah. It's a
do you
nice
have some?
website. Yeah.
I was just going to ask you if you have some of the articles on that on
I do, yeah.
dualbrainpsychology.com.
Yes, I did.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Well, this has been wonderful, Dr. Frederick. I enjoy having you come on. You have done your podcasts have been amazing, and we've got so much traction on your podcast. So many people are interested in all the topics that you've discussed, whether it be anxiety, whether it be depression, addiction. People are very interested to know more about it and how it affects the brain and what they can do to actually stop it from occurring. And I really like
The
it.
problem that I've had in promoting this, because I want people to be able to use it, is that it's sort of like I'm saying, here's the man with two heads. And it sounds like it's unbelievable, that you're going to hold up a piece of junk mail and be able to pull yourself together and resist the candy bar. But try it. You have to use your junk mail, and remember, it's half the eye, not the whole eye. And if people try it, actually, you can go to my website and give me feedback. And if it doesn't work, I want to know that. But I think for most people, it's going to be a life-changing event.
Wow. It definitely is. And I remember the first time I did it. It was remarkable, the outcome. So I truly believe this. And I, having epilepsy and doing so many different types of brain tests, there are so many devices out there and so many things out there. The mind is a remarkable thing. People don't realize, the functions of the brain and how remarkable they are, and how the brain can heal itself, how the brain can fix. And we
Right.
think sometimes people get this notion that once something happens to the brain, that's it. But that's not really true. They've done many tests, and the brain can heal itself. And there's tools, and there's w things out there, and there's devices, and there's surgeries that people do, and it actually helps the brain. And it heals the brain.
And there's junk mail.
And there's junk mail, yes, and it works.
that the idea is that the two minds fight with each other.
Yeah.
And what I try to do as a therapist is get them to understand each other and cooperate.
Right.
And that's what takes time. It's
Yes.
trying to get the troubled side to relax. And Freud talked about that trauma leads to repeating the trauma.
Yes.
And so people choose solutions that actually make the trauma worse and keep repeating it.
Exactly.
But the junk mail can help.
It definitely can. And the fact that you taught people how to recognize also the traumas, is going to help people also, because once they recognize it, they could work on fixing it, and that will also help as well.
And the other thing is that the troubled mind is a person, and I can talk with it. And the person can learn how to talk with it. And so you don't need surgery. You can use surgery if you want, or and you can use CMS if you want, or most of the psychiatric medications have a low effect size, but this is compatible with them. And with addiction, I think methadone combined with the light, it would work better. Right now, most methadone clinics do urine tests, and they find fentanyl in people who are enrolled in methadone clinics. So the methadone is not adequately working. And we also do urine tests, and we'll see what our results are soon.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear. This has been amazing. Thank you so much, Dr. Frederick. I really appreciate your time and I appreciate what you're doing. You know, if we could heal the body and we can heal the brain and we can heal all these different types of addictions, anxiety, depressions, things that, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder without having to resort to heavy medications or, you know, different other, you know, options they have that aren't healthy for you. You know, this is something that I think people should definitely take a look at. And I think you're doing a great job. And I thank you so much for what you do. And I personally love the exercise with the envelope, and I've noticed the difference when I've done it. So thank you.
Well, thank you.
You have a great day.
You too. Thank you.